Host your own show and tons more.
Democracy Now! Is funded by you, not by the weapons manufacturers when we cover war or gun violence, not by the oil, gas, coal, or nuclear companies when we cover the climate catastrophe. If you believe in the power of independent media, please make your donation today of $5 or $10 or $5 or $10 a month or any amount at democracynow.org. Every dollar makes a difference, especially because generous donors are matching your contribution dollar for dollar. Thank you so much. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
One of his aides who was there at the meeting then said to me, Rudy doesn't talk about pardons. You have to talk to me, and he's going to ask you for $2 million. And I laughed, and I said, I don't have $2 million. I said, are you out of your mind?
The Justice Department is facing calls to investigate Donald Trump's attorney, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, for allegedly plotting to sell presidential pardons for $2 million and split the money with Trump. The allegations part of an explosive lawsuit filed by a former associate who says she was sexually assaulted and harassed by Giuliani. We'll speak to CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou, who was imprisoned after exposing the U.S. torture program. He says an aide to Giuliani told him a pardon would cost him $2 million. Then, a UN human rights panel is calling on the United States to finally release Abu Zubaydah, who was repeatedly tortured at CIA black sites and Guantanamo.
He's locked up in Guantanamo without charges, not because he did anything wrong, but in fact because he didn't do anything wrong. It's the CIA who wrongly tortured him. And when they found out they were wrong, they're covering it up by detaining him incommunicado forever.
We'll speak with one of Abu Zubaydah's lawyers and look at Abu Zubaydah's shocking illustrations that show torture techniques used on him, including waterboarding, sleep deprivation, force feeding, and threats of rape. Then, the CEO of the company behind ChatGPT warns Congress about the dangers of artificial intelligence.
I think if this technology goes wrong, it can go quite wrong, and we want to be vocal about that. We want to work with the government to prevent that from happening.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations is warning the next 5 years are likely to be the warmest on record, with far-reaching repercussions for health, food security, water management and the environment. The UN's World Meteorological Organization said Wednesday heat-trapping greenhouse gases and a naturally occurring El Niño event will combine to make it 98% certain that at least one of the next 5 years will top 2016 as the hottest year on record. And the agency said there's a 2 in 3 chance that average global surface temperatures will reach 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels for at least one of the next 5 years. That exceeds the maximum temperature rise set by the Paris Climate Agreement in 2015. This is Petra Tallis, head of the World Meteorological Organization.
There's no return back to the good old days because we already have such a high concentration of carbon dioxide, and also, of course, we have also increased the methane concentration in the atmosphere. And the best that we can do is to phase out this negative trend.
In northern Italy, at least 8 people were killed, thousands more forced to evacuate as torrential rains caused rivers to burst their banks, flooding farmlands, leaving tens of thousands without electricity. Some parts of Italy's Emilia-Romagna region received half their average annual rainfall in 36 hours. Burma's government in exile says the death toll from Cyclone Mocha has topped 400, with many more missing and unaccounted for. The storm made landfall Sunday with the strength of a Category 5 hurricane, one of the most powerful cyclones to hit the region. Burma's National Unity Government Wednesday accused the ruling military junta of blocking aid agencies from accessing the hard-hit Rakhine State following reports that soldiers attacked Rohingya Muslims just before the storm's arrival. In London, climate activists rallied outside the Africa Energy Summit Wednesday, demanding fossil fuel companies, including Shell and Total, drop their support for oil and gas projects in Africa. Protesters say the 900-mile East African crude oil pipeline through Uganda and Tanzania would be the largest, longest pipeline of its kind in the world, emitting 53 million tons of carbon per year, displacing 100,000 people, threatening protected wildlife and water resources. This is Renan Osborne of the People's Health Movement.
Total Energies and other fossil fuel monsters present at this conference are leaving thousands without livelihoods and homes, fueling war, exacerbating the climate crisis, and pushing the country deeper into poverty and crippling debt. This summit must not be normalized.
The United Nations says it needs $3 billion in aid as it warns of a spiraling humanitarian disaster in Sudan after more than 1 month of fighting between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces.
The conflict that erupted on 15th of April last month in Sudan has killed hundreds of people, injured more than 5,000 people, and millions more have been confined to their homes, unable to access basic services and essential health care. And nearly a million people have been displaced, many across to neighboring countries. Today, 25 million people, more than half the population of Sudan, need humanitarian aid and protection.
At least three pro-democracy activists were arrested by Sudanese security forces Tuesday as activists say humanitarian aid is being weaponized to gain power amidst a dire need for essentials among the population. West Darfur and the capital Khartoum remain the epicenters of fighting. There have been mounting reports of rape and sexual violence with refugees and internally displaced women and girls particularly vulnerable. There have also been nearly 200 reports of disappearances since the conflict broke out. In Turkey, opposition parties have filed complaints over alleged voting irregularities in Sunday's presidential and parliamentary elections when the incumbent president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, outperformed expectations and claimed nearly half the vote. This follows reports that the Turkish government arrested elected officials and civil society leaders from Spain who traveled to a Kurdish-majority city in eastern Turkey to monitor the vote. The election's heading to a runoff May 28th. On Wednesday, Erdogan's opponent, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, stoked anti-immigrant sentiment in an appeal to Turkish nationalists.
I am addressing everybody out there. We did not find this homeland on the street. We will not abandon our homeland to this mentality that allowed 10 million irregular migrants to come live among us.
In the United States, in Texas, Republican lawmakers have passed a bill banning gender-affirming care for transgender children. It'll also require patients already on transition medications to wean off those treatments. It now heads to the desk of Texas's right-wing Governor Greg Abbott. The Texas State House Wednesday also advanced a bill banning trans college athletes from school sports competitions. Meanwhile, Republicans in Florida stepped up their attacks on transgender rights Wednesday as Governor Ron DeSantis signed a slew of extreme measures into law. They include a ban on transgender people using public restrooms that align with their gender identity and a ban on gender-affirming care for children and most adults, with criminal penalties for providers who violate the ban. State courts now have the power to separate trans children from their families if they support transition care. Other legislation bans minors attending events hosted by drag performers and bars transgender and non-binary students and school staff from sharing their preferred pronouns. In other Florida news, publisher Penguin Random House and Pen America are suing the Escambia County School District for banning books on race and LGBTQ issues, citing a violation of the First Amendment. The South Carolina House of Representatives passed a six-week abortion ban. The bill now goes to the state Senate. Earlier this year, the South Carolina Supreme Court struck down a previous six-week ban, but Republicans hope the new effort will be successful, as the Supreme Court's lone woman justice has since retired and was replaced with a right-wing male judge. Meanwhile, a federal appeals court appears likely to restrict access to the abortion pill mifepristone, the most commonly used abortion method in the United States. The three conservative judges on the panel, who were appointed by former Presidents Donald Trump and George W. Bush, grilled the Justice Department and drug maker Danko Laboratories over the medication's approval by the FDA over 20 years ago and more recent efforts to expand patient access. This is Justice Department attorney Sarah Harrington being questioned by Judge James Ho.
The district court's order is an unprecedented and unjustified attack on FDA scientific expertise. This court should vacate the order because plaintiffs are unlikely to prevail on any of their claims and because the balance of equities tips decidedly against preliminary relief.
Now, I hate to cut you off so early, but you said unprecedented. We had a challenge to the FDA just yesterday.
You had a challenge to the FDA, yes, but I don't think there's ever been any court that has vacated FDA's determination that a drug is safe to be on the market.
The Intercept reports U.S. Marshals spied on abortion protesters following the repeal of Roe v. Wade using artificial intelligence, AI software, from the social media monitoring company Dataminer, which is an official partner of Twitter. Montana's Republican governor has signed legislation banning TikTok, making Montana the first U.S. state to outlaw the popular social media app. The new law forbids app stores, like those operated by Apple and Google, from making TikTok available for download in Montana, with fines of $10,000 a day for violators. Civil liberties groups have promised a legal challenge. Keegan Medrano of the ACLU of Montana said in a statement, "With this ban, Governor Gianforte and the Montana legislature have trampled on the free speech of hundreds of thousands of Montanans who use the app to express themselves, gather information, and run their small business in the name of anti-Chinese sentiment," unquote. In March, the Biden administration threatened to ban TikTok unless its Chinese owners agree to sell their stake in the company. Deutsche Bank has agreed to pay $75 million to survivors of sexual abuse by deceased financier convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. The settlement comes as part of a class action lawsuit against the bank for helping finance Epstein's crimes. In related news, the U.S. Virgin Islands has subpoenaed billionaire Elon Musk as part of its lawsuit against J.P. Morgan Chase over the bank's enabling of Epstein's human trafficking empire in the Virgin Islands, where Epstein owned two islands. The suit does not state any wrongdoing by Musk, but seeks more information on any role Epstein may have played in managing Musk's finances. Ecuador's conservative president, Guillermo Lasso, has dissolved the opposition-led National Assembly, blocking efforts by lawmakers to impeach him amidst accusations of corruption and embezzlement in a scheme involving a state-owned oil transportation company. The constitutional power, which had never been used in Ecuador before, allows Lasso to rule by decree until new elections can be held. Lasso made the move a day after Ecuador's National Assembly held its first hearing, where Lasso addressed lawmakers and denied involvement in the scheme, which opponents of Lasso say cost Ecuador millions in losses. And in Argentina, thousands of people marched through the streets of Buenos Aires Wednesday, protesting soaring inflation, demanding an end to austerity measures imposed by the International Monetary Fund as part of a $44 billion bailout. Last month, Argentina's government reported the peso's annual inflation rate soared to 109% in a country where 40% of the population lives below the poverty line. This is lawmaker Gabriel Solano.
Inflation is high. This adds up to the fact that the government sends less money to the soup kitchens. You have an explosive combination. There's no work, jobs are precarious, and not even soup kitchens have the basics.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Former New York City mayor and Donald Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani is coming under increasing scrutiny this week after a former associate filed a $10 million lawsuit against him, alleging, quote, unlawful abuses of power, wide-ranging sexual assault and harassment, wage theft, and other misconduct, unquote. The suit was filed by Noelle Dunphy, who says Giuliani secretly hired her in 2019 off the books while promising her an annual salary of $1 million. Dunphy says Giuliani repeatedly sexually assaulted her. She also accuses Giuliani of being constantly drunk and making racist, sexist, and anti-Semitic comments, many of which were recorded. The lawsuit also alleges Giuliani plotted to sell pardons for $2 million to be split between him and Donald Trump, who would issue the pardons. Giuliani has faced this accusation before. 2 years ago, former CIA officer John Kiriakou said an associate of Giuliani offered him a pardon for $2 million. Kiriakou was seeking a pardon for his role in exposing the CIA's torture program. He'd been arrested in 2012, spent nearly 2 years in prison. Well, John Kiriakou joins us now from Washington, D.C. John, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's good to have you with us. Let's go back to what actually happened. What were you offered and by whom? And where was the offer made?
Well, I reached out to an associate of Rudy Giuliani's in late 2020, after the election, thinking that this would be a good time to try to get to President Trump and ask for a pardon. I was able to get through to one of Giuliani's associates or assistants, and he suggested that we meet at the Trump Hotel here in Washington, D.C., the first week of January 2021. Interestingly enough, he said that we had to meet at noon because the mayor enjoyed a drink or two or five earlier in the day, and by 2 o'clock we wouldn't be able to have much of a conversation. So we met at 12 o'clock rather at the Trump Hotel. It was several of us. It was Giuliani, his assistant, a second person, and my attorney and me. And we sat there and made idle chit-chat for 10 minutes. And finally I said, so, Mr. Mayor, there's this issue of a pardon. And Giuliani immediately stood up and said he needed to use the men's room, and he walked away. And I said to the aide, what just happened? And he said, you never talked to Rudy about a pardon. You talked to me about a pardon, and I'll talk to Rudy. I said, okay, that's fine. And he said, Rudy's going to want $2 million. And I laughed, and I said, I don't have $2 million. I'll never have $2 million. And besides, even if I had $2 million, I wouldn't spend it to recover a $700,000 pension. And we sat there for a moment, and I said, look, this isn't going to work out. Thanks for your time. And I got up, and I walked away. And that was the end of the conversation.
And how were you ultimately granted a pardon, John?
Oh, I wasn't. You know, it's funny. I had some support in the Trump administration, but only because I was convicted under the Obama administration. But I had approached Giuliani. I had hired a Republican lobbyist, and in the end, nothing came of it.
So, John, if you could explain if there was any mention. Now, again, while there are many things in this lawsuit, very explosive lawsuit, that were recorded, because apparently Noel Dunphy says Giuliani wanted things recorded because he was talking about writing a book about himself and wanted a lot of things recorded. This wasn't. And so these allegations that he was going to split the money also told people who wanted this kind of pardon not to go through the regular routes, because then it would all be documented and he couldn't take the money. So were you told that this would have to be sort of completely off the books and you don't go through the Justice Department? Did you have any indication, because at this point we don't know of any direct connection between him and Donald Trump splitting this, if in fact Trump gave a pardon to you?
Frankly, this lawsuit is the first that I had heard that money was supposed to be split with President Trump. I will say that Giuliani's aide told me not to bother going to the website of the Office of the U.S. Pardon Attorney and applying online. He said, we're going to do this quietly, privately, behind the scenes. And I said, that's fine. I know that's the way things work in Washington. So I never applied for the pardon officially, formally, with the Office of the U.S. Pardon Attorney. It was all supposed to be hush-hush.
And in fact, John, Trump granted very few pardons. I don't know if that's just officially through, as you say, the Office of the Pardon Attorney, or even through these other means.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting thing. There really is a very formal way of applying for a pardon. You go to this website, you fill out the form, and you hope for the best. In the meantime, the website routes your application to the FBI. The FBI does a background investigation to make sure that you've been rehabilitated. And then it goes to your prosecuting attorneys and to the prosecuting judge for comment. Now, this is supposed to be independent of the Justice Department. The Office of the U.S. Pardon Attorney is supposed to be attached to the Executive Office of the President. It's actually not. It physically sits at the Justice Department, which is not the way lawmakers on Capitol Hill had originally intended it. But as a result, almost nobody is recommended for a pardon. Almost nobody. And in the meantime, if you want a pardon and you have access to the president, that's really how you do it. That's not unique, or that wasn't unique to Donald Trump. Every president does it that way. It's kind of one of those ugly little secrets of Washington.
John Ciarocco spent 14 years at the CIA as an analyst and a case officer. He exposed the Bush-era torture program, was the only official jailed in connection with that torture program, he for exposing it. Ciarocco was reportedly told he could secure a presidential pardon for Trump, from Trump, for $2 million. Well, John Ciarocco is going to stay with us. Coming up, a U.N. human rights panel is calling on the United States to finally release Abu Zubaydah, who was repeatedly tortured at CIA black sites and Guantanamo. We're going to speak more with John Ciarocco, who was involved with his capture in 2002, and we'll speak with Abu Zubaydah's attorney. Stay with us. Harvest Moon, performed by Nico Peoples. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. A warning to our audience. This segment contains graphic descriptions and visual descriptions of torture. The United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detentions calling on the United States to immediately release Abu Zubaydah, who's been held in U.S. custody since 2002 for more than 20 years, first as a CIA black sites, including in Poland and Lithuania. He was later transferred to Guantanamo, where he's been held without charge. The UN body says Abu Zubaydah's ongoing detention may be a crime against humanity. The CIA has been accused of using him as a human guinea pig by testing torture methods on him, including the practice known as waterboarding, which he endured 83 times, and rape under the pretext of rectal feeding. The Center for Policy and Research at Seton Hall University has just published a shocking new report that compiles a series of 40 graphic drawings by Abu Zubaydah that chronicle the horrific torture he endured. The drawings include graphic depictions of waterboarding, force feedings, prisoners being held in boxes, and a practice known as walling. In a moment, we'll be joined by two guests, but first, let's turn to the trailer to Alex Gibney's 2021 documentary, The Forever Prisoner.
In 2002, FBI and CIA agents thought they had nabbed a diabolical al-Qaeda mastermind. Abu Zubaydah has never been charged with a crime. He was imprisoned in the secret CIA unit called Strawberry Fields, as in forever.
Prior to 9/11, CIA never captured or detained anybody.
They weren't prepared.
People started looking for who was best to interrogate, and there weren't any.
Psychologist James Mitchell was the only candidate considered.
I just took it for granted that they knew what they were doing.
CIA officers were certain he was holding back because he wasn't telling them what they wanted to hear.
Something more aggressive had to be done.
The lawyer's philosophy is, tell me what you want to do, boss, and I'll make it legal.
We asked him to draw what was done to him.
Abu Zubaydah is put in isolation.
Everything that was happening was Mitchell's experiment. Nudity has been approved. Sleep deprivation has been approved. Noise has been approved. The same song again and again and again.
Spent 11 days in a coffin-shaped box. He was on the waterboard.
I mean, this is crazy.
The best evidence of what happened is the video.
What was the reason why you thought that it was important to have the tapes destroyed?
I needed to protect the people who were there.
Destroying evidence would inevitably lead to accusations of a cover-up.
It would make the CIA look bad.
It was an impossible story to tell, so I sued the CIA to get materials unredacted.
We saw constant manipulation by the CIA, misleading Bush, misleading Obama.
If my boss tells me it's legal, if the president approved it, I'm not going to get into what some journalist thinks about it.
In America, we have this thing called innocent until proven guilty.
We were the leaders of the effort against cruel and unusual punishment after 9/11. That's out the window.
Do the ends always justify the means? Are we prepared to abandon our principles in order to defend them?
That was the trailer for Alex Gibney's 2021 documentary, The Forever Prisoner. We're joined now by two guests. Still with us, CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou, who was involved in the capture of Abu Zubaydah. Kiriakou was later jailed for almost 2 years for revealing that the CIA had waterboarded him. We're also joined by one of Abu Zubaydah's lawyers, Mark Denbo. He is a professor at Seton Hall University School of Law and director of its Center for Policy and Research, co-author of the news report, American Torturers, FBI, and CIA abuses at dark sites and Guantanamo. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! John Kiriakou, I want to continue with you. Talk about how Abu Zubaydah was caught and where you were, how you were involved with his capture.
Sure. Abu Zubaydah was captured in Faisalabad, Pakistan, in late March 2002. I happened to be the chief of CIA counterterrorism operations in Pakistan at the time, and we had been looking for Abu Zubaydah for about 6 weeks. We finally were able to narrow down his possible location to one of 13 sites. We hit all 13 sites simultaneously at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he happened to be in one of those sites. I was at a safe house nearby in radio contact with all of our officers who were at the site. And when I say our officers, I mean they were teams of CIA, FBI, and Pakistani intelligence officers. Abu Zubaydah was shot when he was trying to leap from the roof of one house to the roof of another to get away. After specifically being told not to fire any shots, a Pakistani policeman shot him anyway and nearly killed him. He was hit three times with an AK-47. We rushed him to a hospital in Faisalabad. They were able to staunch the bleeding as best they could, and then we put him on a helicopter and sent him to a Pakistani military base. He was there for, I think it was 56 hours in the end, and then put on an unmarked CIA plane and taken to the first of several black sites.
John, what were you told about why you had to find this man? You said the search went on for 6 weeks. What did the CIA say they thought he was responsible for?
Well, I'm smiling because that is such an important question. What we were told in the very beginning was that Abu Zubaydah was one of the most dangerous and most violent men on the planet, that he was the number three in Al-Qaeda. He was one of the masterminds of the 9/11 attacks. And in the end, none of that was true. None of it. The information.